Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And in a few moments, Joe Lenardi. First, our play-by-play call of the day. The Florida Panthers take the lead in the third period.
Picked up here in the near corner. Pesek behind the net. Smith in front for Jokinen. Now to Pesek. Out to the high slot. Trocheck shot. He scores! Vincent Trocheck has broken the tie with 4.6 seconds to go. He let it go through traffic. Allen never saw it. The Panthers lead 2-1.
And Doug Plagans with the call on WQAM. All right. Let's face it. Everybody needs a slice of Florida Panthers hockey in their life. We gave it to you. All right. He is not only brilliant at what he does, but he's also one of the great guys out there. And known him for a long time. He doesn't want to admit that, but I will. And that is Joe Lenardi, out of the bunker and into the light. Welcome, Joe. Great to have you with us.
Steve, my friend, how are things?
It's going well. DJ wanted me to tell you hi, by the way.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
I saw him Saturday, briefly. And what? Where are you, home tonight?
Yeah, home with Purdue tonight.
Okay, that should go well.
One quick note before we get into everything else. Is St. Joe's season a product of some just critical injuries that have knocked them down, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and departures. Last year, won the second most games in the history of the school. Second Atlantic 10 title in 3 years. The top three players from that team either left or went to the NBA. Players 4, 5, and 6 are all out for the season. So you do the math.
Yeah, and that's the delicate balance we talk about in today's college game that a lot of people don't realize. That when that happens, suddenly your season and everything, your expectations have to change.
I mean, most programs don't have, you know, a comparable piece to plug and play if a key guy goes down. And in the Hawks' case, these were two guards who were averaging just under 40 combined heading into league play. The first one was injured in the first league game, ACL, and the second one broke his foot 2 weeks ago. And shockingly, we can't score. Go figure.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand that, Joe. What's wrong with Phil?
Well, a lot of things, but it doesn't have anything to do with coaching.
Exactly. You know, you and I both know that one. All right. When it comes to putting this together, what does Joe Lenardi do? Does Joe Lenardi put down his opinion to a point, or do you try to think like the committee thinks?
I really, really, really try to be 100% inside their heads. That's always the goal. That's not always the outcome, because like you or any of the listeners who might be serious college basketball fans, we all bring kind of our own preconceived notions of teams and programs and coaches and the tournament into our thinking. It's just, it's human nature. You know, some people like chocolate, some people like butter pecan. And I really try at the end of the line with the at-larges to say, here's what I think they're going to do. But at least half of my misses over the years have been when I haven't been able to kind of put a leash on my own opinion of what I would do voting in that situation. Because, again, it sometimes you don't even realize it until after the fact. And you know, I guess if they're allowed a human element, I should be too.
Exactly right. I want to get into the conference record part of it. I know they're supposed to just take Team A, Team B, Team C, and not bring into account conference, but again, that human element comes in. Back in, was it the 80s, Johnny Orr's team in the old Big Eight got in with a 5-9 record in conference.
Only time. Only time, four games under.
Joe, realistically, should you be at least 500 in conference or at least in the neighborhood of that, in your opinion, to be considered? This is now just your opinion.
You're giving me a softball here, and I'll take it, because I've been on this bandwagon for a long time. I think that in order to add more meaning to the conference schedule, particularly late-season games among teams in the middle of the pack, as well as early-round conference tournament games, you know, the ones in front of 400 people in an empty building at, you know, 10:30 in the morning. Let's require teams to be tournament eligible, kind of like we have bowl eligibility, right?
Yeah.
You know, on the football side. And to me, I would say 500 in all your conference games, including conference tournament games. So if you're, I don't know, 8-10, but you make a run and get there, or even, you know, if it's an odd number, if you get within a game of 500, you know, at adding it together, like let's say you're, I don't know, 11-12, or just something that would avoid us talking about, and no disrespect here, Clemson and Pitt, each of which is 4-10 right now in the ACC as legitimate bubble teams. It just makes no sense to me that we say that the conference season, which is, you know, the better part of two-thirds of your schedule, that you can fail at that portion of your season and still be in the tournament. Now, you know, I know all about how strong these leagues are, and I know all about the unbalanced schedule, and I know a lot of things. What I also know is when I study these 500 and below 500 power conference teams over a period of years and how they perform in the actual NCAA tournament, they're outperformed by what I call the higher-end non-majors, who were, you know, 27-5 in the Missouri Valley, let's
right.
say. And they're outperformed by those teams, even though there are fewer of the non-majors, and on average they're seated about a line and a half worse than what I would call the middling majors. And I think there's a simple reason, Steve, why they outperform. And that's because winning teams typically continue winning, and 500 teams typically play 500. So, call me crazy, but winning should matter.
Whenever I've been to the NCAA tournament, and then we see either a really close game with a smaller conference against a major conference, I always point out to somebody right away, I said, do you realize that that team won their conference and won their conference tournament? Thus, they have great momentum. They don't think they're going to lose because all they're accustomed to is winning.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the under 500 rule, I mean, there's no their job is to select the 36 best available at-large teams.
Right.
Period. There's no, you know, well, you can't do this or you can't pick the team whose mascot flaps all the time or, you know, whatever. There's no restriction. And a sub 500, you know, permission would help a Penn State in a lot of years. I just don't think it's good for the sport. And the fact that those teams generally underperform to a large degree, I think is simply a reflection of the obvious. It doesn't even necessarily mean that a Clemson at 4-10 doesn't have better players than a UNC Wilmington at, you know, I don't know, 26-4. It just means that they've had a better season. And, you know, unless you're talking the really low major leagues, the ones that never win in the tournament and never get more than one team in, there's a real talent gap there. But there isn't that big of a talent gap between the best team in the Colonial and the bottom, you know, quarter of the ACC. That's why those teams win NCAA games on neutral floors with neutral crowds and neutral officials. When those teams play one another in a regular season game, it's almost always at the home court of the Power Conference school.
Gonzaga, when they came out with the four brackets on February 11th, was the fourth number one seed. Now, this is only my opinion. I just come out felt that was a little bit of elitism that they were a four. Their non-conference, Mark Few knows what his conference is about. So in the non-conference, they played a lot of quality teams, and guess what? Beat every single one of them. How do you view Gonzaga?
Yeah, I mean, they beat Florida, currently a three. They beat Arizona, currently a two on neutral courts. They beat Iowa State, neutral, currently a seven. They beat Oklahoma State, neutral, currently a seven. And they beat St. Mary's, home and away, currently a six. That is not the same as playing a Big Ten or an ACC schedule. But none of the Big Ten or ACC schools would have to play that many games away from home. So the argument, tired, I believe, that what would Gonzaga do in the ACC is they would lose three or four games. And the argument, what would Duke do if their non-conference schedule was flipped and instead of playing, you know, 14 games at Cameron, they had to play 10 neutral or road games, they might lose a couple. And Gonzaga has not. To me, Gonzaga is an obvious number one seed. If the teams ahead of them lose down the stretch, I would have no trouble myself elevating them to number one overall. But I think we know now, at least from recent years' performance from the committee, that that's not going to happen.
Big Ten's a good league this year. It is not a great league. It is not a pool of deep, great teams. The best one's probably the one I'm going to see tonight in Purdue. You've moved them up to a four in your bracket. If they were to win the Big Ten tournament, could they get to the three line?
I'd like to think so, Steve, but I think we have to face facts here that in the committee's reveal a week and a half ago, there weren't any Big Ten teams on the top four lines.
Yeah, it was an offer. Yep.
And I had, you know, I had Wisconsin and Cincinnati as 15 and 16 on my board. The committee on the teams that were 17 and 18 for me, that would have been, I guess, Butler and I'm drawing a blank at the moment. I know it wasn't a Big Ten team.
Right.
Oh, no, Duke.
Duke and Butler.
They were just beginning its surge. And, you know, I think most of us would think that Duke has top four seed level talent. I just didn't think to that point in time they had demonstrated it enough. Coach K had just come back. They hadn't, you know, they were in the early stages of this winning streak. Good for them. But, you know, I look at the Big Ten winner if Purdue and or Wisconsin separate as fours. You know, the way they count quality wins now, I don't know if there's enough really great wins in the league available for either of those teams to move up to a three. Although if I were voting and one of them ran the table, I think they'd be a three in my mind.
Okay. One final question. I'll let you go because I know you've got a lot of work you have to do with this tonight. When you... Over the years, now each year is different, I understand, so this year could be completely different. Have the conference tournaments played any role in how you ended up with decisions along the way? Did they really have as much impact as some people perceive?
They can, but fundamentally, you know, I'd like to say, you know, each team's season is a big pizza of about 30 slices.
Yep.
And the conference tournament just happened to be the last two or three of those slices, right? And generally speaking, if you eat that much pizza, you're going to get indigestion. And more teams give themselves indigestion and hurt themselves than those that help. Because the ones you know, that are really good enough and clearly established, they don't need the help. And they're fine. I think in recent years it's been very clear that some very late games on Saturday and Sunday aren't really factored in at all.
Right.
Which I think has led to kind of a scourge of games away from Sunday, to the point now where there's only four or five of them left. And that has made the committee's job easier, I believe. But as long as the games are sanctioned, and as long as, you know, the Big Ten, for instance, is having its championship game as late as possible, I don't think it's the committee's job to ignore that game just because they don't like having to work the last 2 hours.
Joe,
I mean,
my
friend,
it's always great to hear you all the time. I don't care if it's on this, St. Joe's, whatever. It's just great to hear you.
You got it, Steve. See you later.
The outstanding, and I do mean outstanding, Joe Lunardi. Joe is not only, I've talked about the brilliance of how he does this, but he's also one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. I mean, easily. Easily. All right. By the way, just a quick public service announcement. In Danville tonight, as somebody is going door to door, just call the police. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The lights go up. Sean Carey, white suit. The dance floor clears. It's time for SC, the takeover. Disco Inferno. By the way, our announcement about the door-to-door in Danville is a message of this station and the ad council.
All right. Yes, it was.
Most particularly this station. Drew Carey just drove off the road. All right. Or Drew Kelly just drove off the road.
You're not the only one that said that. People will confuse Drew Kelly and Sean Carey and will say, yeah, they come up with Drew Carey. It's like, no.
You're kind of a hybrid.
Sure.
Sure you are.
Yeah.
No, you aren't. Not really. Okay. Great to have everybody on board with us today. Joe Lunardi is one of the great guys to talk to. You can tell we have a lot of fun talking with him. By the way, Thursday, Tony Knopf, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, will be on talking about the business of sports. And look, this is a business. I mean, that's what this comes down to. And there's many facets to the business. There is the business of television, the business of scheduling, the business of selling tickets, the business of doing shows around set events. It's all part of the business. We do this show 5 days a week. Some of them are good. None of them are like the Lawrence Show where there's a best of library. Are you doing another best of coming up tomorrow?
I wouldn't be surprised, but hey, one day we will get at that level. We're working on it. Today we're one step closer.
I think we're definitely a step closer. Yeah. We're also on the third hole of an 18-hole course. That's how far away we are. All right. He's got North Carolina's in a one now, and he dropped Baylor down to a two after the home loss to Kansas. That can all change. Penn State's got Purdue tonight. 5:30 will be the airtime, so I'm out of here fast tonight. I'm going to move it. Get over to the Jordan Center so I can be on the air at 5:30. I got to tell you, the last time that Penn State had a 6 o'clock game was the, Maryland game, right?
A couple weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, it's 5:30 airtime.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in the booth, I settle in a little bit, and they give us these $10 vouchers to spend on food at the concession stand instead of having food in the media room. So I said to Jeff Tarman, I says, hey, how much time? I said, Jeff, what time is it? And he looks at me, he goes, 5:19. I thought, oh, okay, great. I've got 11 minutes here, so I can just go over to the concession stand and back of the broadcast booth and get something. So I'm over there, and Tim Chambers, Pat Chambers' brother, the movie producer, comes over, he starts chit-chatting me in line as I'm ordering. Also, Dick Girardi pokes his head out of the booth and yells down. He goes, "Hey, Steve, we got to start 30 seconds. I said, 30 seconds? Really? So I gave Tim my voucher, and he said, "Oh, I'll buy it for you." I said, "Okay, fine, whatever." So I gave him the voucher. I get in there, and I looked at Jeff. I said, "I thought you said it was 5:19." He says, "I actually meant 5 minutes and 19 seconds to airtime."
The old school back time method.
Whoops. I mean, I was on time. I was only out just outside the booth, but holy cow. Ben Jones, final half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I kept telling him if he did the show long enough, he'd see it my way. You owe me $10. You kept saying no, 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 no.
Finally come around. Learning about our winning formula.
Absolutely. He wonders why we're throwing 98 on the slow gun. By the way, we had the Phillies opener on Friday while I'm enduring a blizzard in Minneapolis. It's supposed to be a foot of snow on Friday in Minneapolis. We might go Thursday night. Like, okay. It's more Marriott points, whatever. See, I always find the bright spots. All right. Sports Bozo of the Day deals with scheduling. As you know, I've talked about this a couple of times, where Penn State has had Saturday-Tuesday games, and the Saturday games were both on the road, and the Tuesday games were both on the road. And at 9 o'clock at night at the furthest reach of the conference. Okay? Saturday, Tuesday, both on the road. Second game each time at 9 o'clock at night. And I've explained how wrong I think that is. Here is conference leader Purdue. You want to know how many Tuesday Saturdays they've played this year? Or excuse me, you know, Saturday then followed by Tuesday? Okay, they're about to do it. Right? They're about to do it. And it is the second time they've done it this year. So you're saying to yourself, now see, they've done it twice. Oh no, au contraire. In each instance, one of the two games was at home. They played Saturday and then Tuesday at Michigan State. So they played Saturday at home on the 21st and played at Michigan State on a Tuesday night, which, by the way, is an easy trip from Purdue. I mean, that is less than an hour flight. They're about to do it again with Michigan State, but at home, and then flying in here to play this game tonight. Now, they have to do it one more time, away on Saturday, but home on Tuesday. Neither, and not one of the three times, not one of the three times, were both games away. And not one of the three times, not one, was a game in the Central Time Zone. I think they think we're stupid and can't figure things out. I mean, I can read. And by the way, I also take the time to look. I shake my head over some of this stuff sometimes. Okay, they've had to do it three times. Each time there's been a home game in the three. Each time. And all three, they've all been in the Eastern Time Zone in proximity to Purdue. This is the furthest trip that they have to make in a Saturday-Tuesday turnaround. But the other game was at home. Like they're coming off a two-game homestand. All right, Ben Jones joins us, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Good. How anxious are you to see this Purdue team tonight?
Oh, I mean, I think any opportunity, you know, you talk about Big Ten teams in general being able to see some of the best players in the country some of these years. You know, the Big Ten's been up and down, but to see a guy like Caleb Swanigan and really just to see Haas in person, a guy that's just a massive human being playing basketball, you know, I think seeing them on the court at the same time, seeing all the bits and pieces that Purdue's had come together over the past few weeks, you know, it's definitely one of those nights where, you know, you're looking forward to see how the game goes, but at the same time, you're just looking forward to seeing, you know, really at least one of the best players in the country, you know, playing in the court in front of you.
Yeah, no question. He will be one of the best when this season is over with. He'll be an All-American somewhere in there. It's my feeling, but my feeling only, that I think this Penn State basketball team is close. But what is your opinion based on what you've watched?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're close. I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, talent-wise, we've said this all year, that this is the most talented team, at least in terms of what you're working with, the kind of players that you can mold a program out of. I think the biggest thing at times is just a matter of getting these guys to put in 40 minutes worth of effort. And I'm not saying at all that these guys aren't trying hard or that like the level of caring isn't there, but I think when you come out of high school, especially when you've been a player that's been the best guy on the floor or one of the best guys on the floor, you're winning by 20 or 30 points every night. You know, learning how to play 40 minutes of Big Ten basketball at a Division I level, night in and night out against really good teams on the road, at home, a lot more games than you play in high school. You know, it's a grind and it wears you down. And I think the biggest thing for this team has been, you know, the X's and O's and figuring that kind of thing out. But at the same time, you know, just sort of, you know, learning what it means to play at that level. And I think because of that, they're absolutely close. But it's a matter of being able to put that all together. And they've done it at times. You've seen it against Maryland. And they've played pretty good basketball as of late. I think their legs just gave out against Nebraska. But certainly, you know, this team is better than it was, you know, several months ago. And it continues to get better. And there's no doubt. You know, I heard you yesterday talking about Purdue, that this is a team, you know, that the arrow is definitely pointed upwards. And it's hard to argue otherwise.
Right. And that's where they are at this moment. Every, you know, young teams have growing pains. Where are a couple of areas that you look at where they have fought through the growing pains and are actually growing?
Well, I think you look at all of those games where they were down and they came back. I mean, I think, you know, the past couple seasons we've been used to seeing Penn State basketball teams that have been behind, that have trailed in games, have found a way to come back, you know, but you're looking at a team that's full of, you know, Tim Frazier, DJ Newbill, Brandon Taylor, guys who've got a lot of years under their belt and have seen this and have been through sort of the ups and downs of a season. And to see, you know, at Indiana, triple overtime, I think in all of those overtimes, you know, at least the first two, there were moments, and even in the third for a certain extent, you know, these moments where they could have folded up and said, you know, we lost this game, and I think everyone kind of felt like they had lost it, and then they make a couple plays, don't quite give up, and they find themselves, you know, in that third overtime, they find themselves in that second overtime, and I think things like that for a young team, those are big moments to say that, you know, we can get punched in the mouth, and we can find a way to get back into a game, and those are the sorts of things. You know, they're the most obvious, I think, obviously, as well. You know, defensively, this is a much better team than it was at the beginning of the year. Offensively, they're figuring out more and more the little things that they want to do right. I think Mike Watkins has gotten better on the offensive end, kind of being a little more assertive and figuring things out. Tony Carr has shot the ball well. You can't say enough good things about how Lamar Stevens has played. And when, you know, Peyton Banks and those guys are on, it's great. So there's mental things they've gotten better at, and there's the physical, you know, sort of basketball things they've gotten better at as well.
Everyone develops at their own pace. Even the guys that are playing a lot still are developing at their own pace. Nazir Bostic had started to work himself into some meaningful minutes here with this team. Kind of setback is it not having him?
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, you look at the numbers and go, well, you know, Nazir's given you less than a rebound and assist, a little over a point a game, but the past three games, I thought he's given Penn State some really hard-working minutes, over 10 minutes the past three games. He's got that key rebound, key basket in against Maryland. And I think it goes to show, you know, much like Josh Reeves, who maybe because he plays more and he has more of the numbers, that you can be a guy that goes out there and plays hard and make a meaningful contribution to the team. And Nazir, I think the past three games in particular, has shown that he's a guy that is figuring out, you know, what he can bring to the table at this stage in his career. And I think, you know, to have him, you know, potentially, depending on what Penn State's postseason looks like, if they go to the postseason, you know, he could be out for the rest of the year. And that's just a tough blow for a kid who's finally getting some minutes and really earning them. This is not a matter of, you know, Penn State has to play Nazir Bostic. They don't have to, and he's earned those minutes. And I think, you know, it's tough on a guy. Careers are long, and, you know, everybody's got bumps and bruises, but the same moment that he's sort of peaking and figuring things out a little bit this year, to go out with a hand injury with that fracture, you know, it's sort of a tough blow for him.
All right, college basketball overall in general, how do you feel about the health of the sport right now, and are they doing enough, especially with one-and-dones and things like that, to promote the sport?
Well, I mean, I think my favorite thing about this year has been the fact that the game has not been dominated by one or two teams. I think, you know, some people look at it and say, you know, well, we kind of want to have these teams, these Kentuckys, these North Carolinas, these Dukes that are going to go out and give you a great storyline because they're rolling over people. And you're going to have that every year. I think you're going to have these teams that are always going to play well. But I think you look at college basketball by and large, there has been, you know, a lot of teams that you could say have a chance to win the national title. I think Gonzaga, you know, even Gonzaga is actually going to be an interesting team come the tournament, because this might be the best Gonzaga team that we've seen in a while. They're definitely defensively probably the best that they've had in this sort of era of Gonzaga's relevancy. So I think all of those things make it a fun sport to watch, because any given night, you know, anybody can beat anybody. And as far as one and done, I know that's a thing that they've been, it's come over the past couple of days, if that's going to change. I think that's always tough, because you don't want to be putting yourself in a position where you're letting these guys leave early and they're not really prepared for the NBA and the sort of the things outside the court that you have to deal with. But at the same time, you see so many of these guys that so clearly, you know, could be, you know, making a lot of money and a lot of plays at the next level. So I think that's one of those things, you know, smarter people than me are going to be able to figure out. But certainly, you know, it's hard to argue that the college basketball is headed in the wrong direction.
I mean, that's an NBA Players Association issue. It is not a college basketball issue. The NBA Players Association, and I don't blame the NBA owners on this at all, for this reason. I think they wanted to get a basic agreement done. Well, why hang it up over that issue? So now they're talking about, hey, look, let's now take some time and maybe revisit it. But I can understand why the NBA owners did not want to push it, because, you know, there are other economic issues in the game that are greater, and you didn't want to hold it up over something that, okay, we sort of care about, but we're not tremendously caring about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when they got that CBA figured out so quickly, and, you know, Chris Paul and Adam Silver have done a good job, you know, being those liaisons between those two parties. And I think, you know, getting that sort of thing done, the one and done, is such a, not an obscure rule, but certainly it doesn't affect the majority of the people that are playing in the sport. But you do mention that's an NBA rule or a Players Association rule, not college basketball. And I do think one of the things, if you get rid of that, would be a lot more fun to see some of these teams. You know, you see a guy like Melo Trimble, who's, you know, everyone sort of jokes that, you know, he was supposed to be one and done, it seems like, 6 years ago, and he's still playing for Maryland. And you see these teams that have familiar faces. I think if anything hurts college basketball, it's the fact that you've got really good players that are not in that level of the sport for very long. You don't have that same sort of, you know, I think one of the things that will make, you know, Penn State football fun next year is people are familiar with this team. There's storylines that they're used to. There's moments that they're used to sharing with these guys. And I think college basketball, when you have a lot of these really top-level talent guys that are in 1 year, by the time you get to know them, they're gone. You know, I think to a certain extent it waters down some of those storylines, but certainly, you know, when people are making millions and millions of dollars, they're not too interested about what story I want to write.
But, Ben, what you've just outlined is the biggest difference between a college fan and a pro fan. A college fan, in my experience, really wants to know about their players. College fan wants to know, what are they studying? What about their hometown? What about their family? You know, what about something interesting that happened to them? Pro fans don't care about any of that. They want to know how many points you scored, how many touchdowns you scored. And by the way, a certain segment wants to know if it's +5 if you won by 6.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of that. And I think, you know, that sort of reflects the business aspect of the NFL. I think, you know, I've gotten to know some people who cover NFL teams, and it's a much tighter, much more business-like structured thing. And certainly, you know, I think that's reflected in the fan bases in a very much of a what have you done for me lately. And we've seen that a little bit here You know, as Penn State's sort of gone on the upswing of, you know, people wanting to see that more and more. But without a doubt, you know, you look at a college football, college basketball fan, they're interested in the sort of John Urschel stories. What are you doing off the court, off the field? What are you doing on it? And, you know, you look at NFL fans and they want to know if, how you're hurting the salary cap next year if you're going to keep dropping passes. So certainly the interests are in very different sorts of things. But I think that probably, like you said, kind of reflects the right. different levels of competition.
Right. But that now I'm going to bring it full circle. That's why the one and done thing has hurt college basketball. Because fans who really want to know about their athletes get to see them for 5-6 months and they're gone. And I think that yeah. is part of the issue that has hurt college basketball with the college basketball fan, because they are different than the pro fan.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it also, you know, it to a certain extent, I think it also means that you can enjoy guys' successes more if they're around a lot longer. I think a lot of Penn State basketball fans have enjoyed seeing Tim Frazier finally make it to the NBA,
sure.
have his moments. After this trade, you know, it looked like Tim, you know, very well could get some more meaningful playing time, and I can only imagine what it would be like to be a Kentucky fan, have, you know, five different NBA players roll through for 5 months, they're on their way, and you know, I mean, it's got to be quite the experience, but without a doubt, like you said, it's one of those things that I do agree, you know, by and large, it's hurt the culture of the game as it pertains to the sorts of things that, you know, college basketball and football fans enjoy in their teams and in their players.
Ben, always a pleasure. We'll see you tonight.
Sounds good, Steve. See you.
All right, and tonight will be in about 40 minutes. So when we're on the air at the Jordan Center, Penn State and 14th-ranked Purdue will come back, wrap up this broadcast extravaganza as only we can on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. A brand new Hyundai Elantra from Sunbury Motors Hyundai can be yours for only $242 per month. This is not a lease payment. $242 per month on a brand new Hyundai Elantra with America's best warranty. A 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors says a 2017 Hyundai Elantra is the absolute best buy for your buck in 2017. Sunbury Motors was voted best car dealership, best quick service, and best body shop. Now add best new compact vehicle with a Hyundai Elantra, and you just made the best decision of 2017. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. There's 34 to choose from, starting at $242 per month, tax and tags extra, at 2.99% APR for 72 months to qualify buyers. Sunbury Motors Hyundai declares 2017 the year of the Elantra. Penn State-Purdue coming up at the bottom of the hour from the Bryce Jordan Center. Purdue ranked 14th in the nation. Caleb Swanigan, the odds-on favorite, the overwhelming favorite to be the Big Ten Player of the Year. One thing that you notice consistently is the vast majority of players, their numbers in conference play are less, and they do drop from their non-conference performance. Not Caleb Swanigan. His numbers are better in conference play than they were in non-conference play. Subtle, but impressive. He's averaging 19 points and over 13 rebounds a game in conference play. He's about a point and a half better per game in conference, and about 1 to 2 rebounds per game better in conference. He's had 23 double-doubles this season, the most in 30 years in the Big Ten. He is 3 off the Big Ten record of 26. There are 16 active 1,000-point scorers in the Big Ten right now. 2 of them will be on the court tonight. Vince Edwards for Purdue and Shep Garner for Penn State. And the game will be at 6 tonight, and we'll be on the air about 34 minutes from now at the bottom of the hour. Purdue has been not a good team at home. Purdue has been a great team at home. They've been a good but not great team on the road. Obviously, the game is here at the Jordan Center tonight. I mean, there'll be a decent crowd, but not a great crowd here tonight. Not in the middle of the week. You got to be realistic about such things. Just the way it is. I've done this for 35 years. I can usually have a pretty good handle on what, you know, what's going to sell, what's not going to sell. And you can't really, in the middle of the week, especially at 6 o'clock even, start time isn't even that great for those who want to travel in for the game. you can sell the fact that it's the 14th ranked team in the country. You can sell the fact that you've got the Big Ten Player of the Year coming in tonight. Guy's probably going to be a first team All-American and blah, 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 blah. And people are like, oh, okay, great. It's the middle of the week. It's the middle of the week. If Penn State's wrestling the 14th ranked wrestling team in the country at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night, I'm telling you right now, all the tickets for Rec Hall will be sold, but the building will not be packed.
Just the way it goes.
Because it's the middle of the week. And the difference is the 14th ranked wrestling team in the country is no better than good to okay. Not like the 14th ranked basketball team in the country, which is really, really good. It's just the depth of the two sports are just completely different. And again, Purdue's 14th. Right now, Joe Lunardi, as he mentioned to us in the previous half hour, would be a 4 seed right now. If Penn State wrestled the 14th ranked team in the country tonight, they would route them to the point where they might even, that the 14th ranked team in the country would not make double digits in points in the dual meet. It's just that much of a chasm between 1 and 14 in wrestling. Whereas Penn State, which is right now an RPI of 72, has a real puncher's chance against 14 tonight. It's just the depth of the sport. Penn State has 7 wins against the top 100 this year, and 3 of them are against the top 25. Again, the depth of the sport. You've got a puncher's chance at 72 out there in your own building against 14. Swanigan and Haas will be hard to handle inside, but Penn State has an advantage at the guard spot. Nazir Bostic is out, broken hand. Expect Terrence Samuel to play more tonight. So there you go. That's the show for today. Our thanks to my good friend Joe Lunardi, Bracketology. Joe's going to rejoin us after the brackets come out that week. Our thanks to Nathan Davis, Bucknell basketball coach. They've got Lafayette tomorrow night at Soica. And Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll talk to you a half hour from now at the Jordan Center.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK, Sunbury.